Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We positively putting together ensembles around here. You can go out to Baltimore Positive and find all of the Baltimore County executives from 1974 till now, along with my partner, Don Moeller. On behalf of our friends at Fadley's, where I picked up some crab cakes last week, I picked up the most delicious fish. I had some steak fish, I had some bronzini. My wife's looking up recipes. We went with a little capers and a little lemon. It was nice. Crab cakes and more. Our friends at Fadley's, make sure you ship those. I'll be back in Catonsville hanging out at State Fair, El Guapo. We got to get these shots. We got to get these masks off, but we got to be taking care of local people. Speaking of that, Moeller and Gary Realty, also one of our sponsors. Jeff's going to be on next week. We're talking a little bit about this market because apparently the market's better than maybe the perception would be, given especially where the banking is and all of that. Don, I know you have worked very, very hard to put the week together. I must say, as the executive producer of Baltimore, the award-winning Baltimore Positive, you put this month together to talk about Joe Biden, and we're going to have a new president, and we're in a pandemic, and all of the oxygen has once again been usurped by this traitorous. I'll leave the rest of it open for you, but I know you've put together what we call election palooza, but what I'm hijacking it. It's impeachapalooza today.
Impeachapalooza, and I'll tell you, I call it therapy palooza. Nestor, I have needed a sit down with this group because I need somebody to try to make sense out of what in the world is going on in the United States of America. And it's a pleasure to welcome back the host of the outstanding podcast, Elevate Maryland, Candace Dodson Reed and Tom Cole. We always refer to him as the legendary Mark Steiner of the Steiner Show. One of the founding partners of Center Maryland, which I believe is 10 years old this week. Damien O'Doherty, congratulations to Center Maryland, and our good friend Lucinda Ware, formerly with Amy Klobuchar and Deputy Director of Policy and Campaigns in the Democracy Division for the ACLU. Lucinda, that is a mouthful title. Does that fit on a card?
I don't know yet. I've never been to the office. Well, I'll let you know when it happens, Don.
Well, Nestor, I'm not really sure. Tom and Candace, let's start with you. You've been out there. You've been talking with people, been trying to make sense of what happened. Maybe let's start with a little bit about, with everybody, we'll go around. Where were you on January the 6th when you realized what was happening? And I'll jump in at the end and tell you what happened to me. But I'm just curious where everyone was, because I think it's a 9/11 moment. Tom?
Yeah, so I started in my office, and full disclosure, just got a little bit too much for me. So I went down to the gym. I needed to get away from it for a bit once things looked like they were under control. And many of the other people there were thinking the same thing of just trying to it was different from 9/11 in that once it was contained, it sort of felt like it was horrible. It was terrible. Now we need to figure out what's next. I will remember that day as 9/11. And in some respects, and this may be difficult for some to hear or believe, in some respects, I see it as surpassing 9/11, because this was almost the end of the United States as far as I'm concerned. This was almost an overthrow of the United States government. So, terrible.
I would say that, you know, over the last couple of days, the thing I thought about watching all these videos, and the video that got to me probably was like Tuesday morning. It was one of the later videos, week after. It was probably the morning of the impeachment, actually. I saw it, which was the bullhorn lady in the window directing things. And I started to think, like, when you talk about 9/11, and I remember that name, Mohammed Atta, right? You know, the ringleader, they went out, they learned how to fly, they put it all together, and then they executed their plan almost to perfection, almost. I mean, you know, plain and summer. But what they tried to do, what they tried to do to America, and what every TSA, all of our security, the freak out, 20 years later, crazy Muslim bans by this guy, that this begat that. But for me, watching the 4chans and all of these parlors, all of these awful places, and having many of those kinds of people in my world over the last 15 years throwing me email because they were Ravens fans or whatever it would be, I think the part of this, we may never know all the tentacles. And I often wonder, maybe you all could speak to this, and Mark, maybe this is where you get in. You know, the FBI, do they have enough people to investigate this many people?
I'm sure they do. I mean, but I think that, you know, when Don was saying, I mean, we were just watching the news, and I guess I wouldn't necessarily compare it to 9/11. I think it's really different. And I also think that we forget about this. If you look at our history, this is nothing new in American history. Maybe not the U.S. Capitol since 1812, but there are numerous times in our history, whether it was Wilmington, North Carolina in 1898, or the Colfax murders in Louisiana in 1873. There are five or six others that I could name and talk about where white mobs have attacked multiracial governments, killed people, taken over capitals, and overthrown governments in our states. This is not new. And I think that I think it's important to understand that from a historical perspective. I mean, you know, when you look at what just happened and you think this is what America's most important experiment in multiracial democracy happened during Reconstruction after the Civil War. And that ended in the same kind of, because the same kind of violence that we saw the other day in Washington, D.C., the same exact kind of violence, but people actually died. Many people died. And so, you know, and I think that this is like, at the root of who we are as a nation, as a people, we have this kind of twisted thing and that wraps itself around each other. And part of it is what we just saw. That's as American as apple pie, what we just saw. That's nothing new in America. And it lives in intertwined contradictorily with the notion of liberty and justice and freedom. Both those things are part of our roots. But this is part of who we are. We have to realize that. And so this is not an aberration. Going to the Capitol is an aberration. Freak people out. And this is just the beginning. Let me just say that, finish with that. I think we're going to see the growth of a very powerful, very far right-wing movement in this country. They are heavily armed. And I think that this is the beginning of something, not the end of something. And so I think that we have to keep things in a historical perspective. This is not in the U.S. Capitol since 1812, but in America, this has happened before.
Mark, I want you to hold on to that idea, and I want to come back and explore it because it is one of the themes that I wanted us to get into. But I want to get around to everybody else first, Candace, and then Lucinda, and then Damian. Candace, you wear so many daggone hats. You got the university thing. You're involved in a campaign for control in Maryland. You're involved in equity efforts. What hat did you have on that day, and where were you, and what effect did it have on you?
Yeah, it's interesting, Don, that you say that, because the hat that I had on that day actually was my personal hat. And I certainly was doing things for my day job and related to our response to what happened on the 6th. But the moment that the Confederate flag was carried into the Capitol and they walked across the rotunda floor where brilliant people have laid in state, right? Like that's where RBG laid in state. That's where Elijah Cummings laid in state. That's where John Lewis laid in state. At that point, my dad texted me. My dad marched with King. My dad was very much a civil rights activist. Dad was the highest ranking black official in the U.S. Commerce Department back in the day. And he texted me and he said, you know, to Mark's point, he said, this isn't new. Because I was like, Dad, like, oh my God. And he's like, one, this isn't new. And we know that, right? Like this is 400 years worth of stuff, right? It's not new. And the interesting thing for my dad, and he said, I am sad, which my dad is like was a college basketball player and played semi-pro football. Like to hear him, and I've never heard him say, I am sad. But then as soon as he said that after, like, and this was all via text because I was working at the same time, he said, and so what are people going to do? He said, you run in those circles. What are people going to do? What are the elected officials going to do? Who's going to stand up for what's right? And what are the things that they're going to do to address this issue that we have in this country that is not new? And he's like, it's one thing. And, you know, you can tell because I've said this over and over again where I come from. But he said, it's one thing to say this is outrage and I'm so mad about this and to retweet all of the things. And it's another thing to look at your own workplace and the influence that you have in your communities and with elected officials and in the state and in the country and actually do something. And so it was an interesting take on that because I was still in the like kind of outraged fear phase of things. But he said what Mark said. He said, we've been here. I've seen this. My dad's 82 years old. He's like, I've seen this. I've been there. And he's like, and my question now is, who is going to do make sure that we do something different as a country? It is beyond time. So that was my personal reflection.
Well, I love that reflection. And as we turn to Lucinda, when you mentioned that, Candace, and I don't know about, you know, Nestor and Tom and Mark and Damien, we all bring different sensitivities to things as I come to you, Lucinda. But your point about the Confederate flag resonates with me because I have to share a conversation that I had with my wife when we were watching news coverage. And I hate the Confederate flag and everything that it stands for. That goes without saying. I will tell you that what I was struck by, and again, it says to me that we really, even though we think we're multiculturally aware, we're not, because I saw two or three African-American members of Congress back-to-back interviewed, and when they asked them the most horrific moment, they were almost moved to tears by describing how they felt seeing the Confederate flag in the people's house. And I turned to Linda and I said, man, we can't forget that because I hate that flag, but that would not have been the symbol of the day that I referenced. And it just hit me really, really strongly. So Lucinda, with that, I turn to you and say, again, reactions, where were you? And you have a lot of friends on that hill, Lucinda. I'm just curious what you're hearing. I mean, those are your buds.
Yeah, so I think I'm in a place of transition. I think spending the last year traveling around the United States, and especially when we saw the protest in Portland, Oregon, that really resonates in my mind. I've kind of moved from shock to expectation. Right. To Mark's point, this is nothing new in our country and it's nothing new in terms of the level and the response that we've seen year long in our country. But I think that I was waiting for law enforcement to step up. And I think a lot of what we've talked about in our podcast recently when we've gotten together is the role and the change that's happening in law enforcement in this country. And to sit at home and to now be working at the ACLU, an organization that at times can be controversial in our support and in our defending civil liberties. You know, I am still new to the ACLU family, but I knew that there was intense conversation, heavy conversation already taking place about what was happening down at the Capitol and making sure that we were really paying attention and that we didn't miss anything in social media and conversations that were starting to happen. But on the flip side, on a personal side, it's more of just anger that we continue to have an unfair, unjust response to these dynamics and situations, how we continue to stand here and still say that we were unprepared, that we didn't know that this was going to happen, but we did know. And yet there was nothing done to stop it. I appreciate Candace telling us a little bit about her history and story and the home that she was raised in. My father is an attorney. He was one of the first attorneys that sued and was on the team in suing the Capitol Police years ago when it dealt with racial discrimination internally. It's been an ongoing issue. It was unfortunate to see the Capitol Police now be in the limelight in a negative way. There were many officers there that were defending it, were doing their job. It is so sorry to see that we've already lost two officers who just were not prepared. And that's where I sit right now. What are we going to do? How are we going to change this? We keep having the same conversations. It is deep-seated and deep-rooted in local government and state government and in federal government. And I don't know if enough is enough for us anymore in America. We keep saying that, but I don't believe that anymore. And so that's kind of where I am right now, Don.
Yeah, kind of breathtaking. Damien, what was the view from Colorado? I mean, you're on the other side of the country, yet again, you have so many connections. And I'm curious, Damien, what you bring to this conversation is you have young children. And I'm curious with parents, as that day evolved and most of our kids are still home, what was your thought and what was the reaction among your girls?
Well, I think it's been a long continuation of this conversation about the Trump presidency with my kids. And, you know, one of the great things about the Trump presidency is I said, there's no way I can live 30 miles near this thing. I just can't watch it. Can't watch my state be overrun by a Republican governor. So I took the low road out and took.
By the way, I Googled Rifle, Colorado to figure out where the hell that was. Just so you know, I did.
So the our congresswoman. So I jumped in from the frying pan to the fire because our congresswoman here is Lauren Boebert. So she's the woman that advertises about having a Glock as she enters the Capitol. Just before all of this occurred. Look, I don't even know how to begin to explain this to my children because I would have to say something too honest, and I'm not there yet. I mean, what I saw, I always thought the Trump presidency was sort of the emperor with no clothes, obviously. But when the heartbeat of international democracy is overrun amidst the biggest vote that they take in any 4-year period of time, you have to suggest that the empire has no clothes, that how can we even have discussions about climate change and expectations about reform in policing and so many other huge education issues?
The plague in there too.
The plague. How can we even begin to have those conversations at the federal level when you can't protect the house that the conversation's in? That is something that every Republican, I would hope, and every Democrat, I would hope, could just say, shouldn't that place have some measure of protection so that votes and the business of government can proceed? Because let me tell you what, whether it's a city as challenged as Baltimore or Sacramento, or really all of our cities are challenged these days, or states all across the country and places where they vote for things I couldn't even imagine even being on the agenda in Maryland, you know, all of those people are transitioning their local city council, their local mayor, their local state houses, and with rare exception, the business of government can move. And so this is just an astonishing moment of sort of evidence that we're a failed state.
Well, go ahead, Damien. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine.
Okay. Well, because I want to pick up, I think that's a perfect segue back to Mark, the idea of a failed state. Because Mark, as you often do, you ripped the Band-Aid off a little bit in your opening segment. And I think we heard kernels of it from Candace and Lucinda. And that's this issue, Mark. And boy, did you put it front and center, and maybe you can kick off the discussion. Is it appears, I think now, and I think every day we get a little more and a little more, that there was indeed among police departments across the nation, and certainly among recently retired military, if not current military, tacit and in some ways overt support of this insurrection. And that's something that we have really shied away from discussing in this country. And I think that's where you were going, Mark.
Well, I think, and what Damien said, I mean, I think many people are talking about, are we a failed republic? Is this the beginning of a failing republic? And I think that something you have to take really seriously. I mean, you have to think about where we are, what's going on here. The reality is And I think it's important to say it this way, because every cop obviously is not a white supremacist. But that mindset, those people are in the police department in numbers that are too large, to even think about. And the military too. My oldest grandson is in the Army. I have two grandsons in the Army now, and I have another grandson who's a city cop in Baltimore. And the grandson in the Army, he said, you know, when I was in basic training, he said the racism, and my grandson is black, he said the racism that I encountered was really overwhelming among some of the troops. And he said, well, the majority of them were for Trump. Then I get to my training, which was in his training, he works in air traffic control and space telecom. And he said there, it was the flip. It was the exact opposite in terms of mindsets. So that mindset is deep. You know, I mean, the majority of combat units that we have in this country right now that fought Afghanistan and Iraq, the majority of them were white men from the South and the mountain states. And I'm not trying to paint that all those populations with a broad brush here. I'm just trying to deal with the reality of the mindset politically where people are. So we're in a very dangerous place. And I think we have to understand how dangerous a place we're in. And I think that we cannot take this lightly. There are no easy and simple answers to this. And part of it, you know, I mean, some of the failed policies of the Democrats in this country help lead to the point we're in. And I think there has to be real reflection and real thinking about what kind of things have to go in place to try to staunch the bleeding in our democracy here. And I think we're for a very difficult time.
I'm sorry.
Found a Biden victory. A really difficult
time. Sorry, I was just going to say, that's so great, Mark. And like, I just want to even build on that and say, you know, the racism in our country, right, and how it affects folks is beyond police departments, right? Like, I mean, let's be clear that this is in education, this is in housing, this is in every facet of our lives. And like, the police sometimes get a bad rep, right? And like, I think that's a piece of it, right? Like, we need reform, fine, yes, for sure. We also need education reform. There are also health disparities. There's also, you know, economic opportunities. There's also housing. And so it's pervasive. And so I think we have to be real about the conversation to say, are we looking, and I just saw recently some of the things that are coming out related to the speaker's Black agenda. And I'm like, okay, yes, love it all, because it's pervasive and it's environmental justice, right? Like, it's across the board. And how are we looking at policies and everything across the board to address the systemic problem in this country? It is bigger than police reform. That's a piece of it. Let me be clear, but it is bigger than police reform.
Tom Cole, you've been pretty, pretty vocal. Those of us who follow you on Twitter and Facebook, you have not held back in terms of your frustration. I think, well, I'm not going to put words in, but I'm going to let you describe your frustration. But I get a sense that you think Democrats are not doing enough to grab the bull by the horns here. Is that a mischaracterization?
No, I think you're right. I mean, probably one of the things you're pointing to is that I had commented about, you know, the party that was caught flat-footed by losing semantic battles like the rain tax is having a really hard time calling this terrorism. It is terrorism. And in terms of how vocal I've been, Candace and I spent a lot of time on Elevate Maryland talking about norms and talking about norm shifting. And I think it is critical in this moment, and I obviously agree with everything that my partner has said and everything everyone else has said in terms of the systemic things that we address, but it's not just the law. It's how we talk to one another, what we allow in the marketplace of ideas, and what we say is intolerable in the marketplace of ideas. And we have allowed and comforted and given space for disgusting, foul rhetoric that has made people think that they can charge in to the United States Capitol with a Confederate flag, with plastic handcuffs, with the gallows in the yard, and say, you work for us, so now I'm going to go kill you. And so that is why I've been so vocal. I think that it is critical that those who recognize how terrible this is be loud and vocal, because what's going to happen, and I'm already seeing it, I'm already seeing it with my own family members, is this same toxic tar of evil is coming back in, because this is what they've become accustomed to thinking that they can say. And the start is taking that terrorist in chief off of Twitter, but we need to put out all the other fires. It's an infection. We need antibiotics everywhere. So that's why I've been so vocal.
I want to jump in with a media thought about this, and several of us here have been in and around the media in one way or another. Fox News, the election, what Biden is now calling the big lie, right? The election. All of you have been intimately, much more so than I, involved in elections and election processes and how Democrats and Republicans and everything's videotaped. And we saw it in Georgia. We saw it in Pennsylvania. We've seen it everywhere. 0 for 60 or 1 for 60 or whatever that number, whatever ridiculousness it was, the fact that Joint Chiefs of Staffs and judicial, all across the board, everyone's called it a lie. The people that were down there climbing in the windows with guns and bombs and many of them had that malice in whatever place they're in. Long, long ago. They've been waiting a long time to do this, right? Then there are the recent radicalized, the people you're talking about that were in the military on our side during the Obama watch recently, who now all of a sudden are radicalized in, and I go back to Muhammad Atta, right? We go back to radicalized white nationalism and terrorism in our country. And I see the media's role. I see the cult of personality of this con man. But more than that, what really worries me is I've got a 75-year-old Republican woman down the hall and a couple that are in their 80s around the wonderful people who've given to this country, who've been involved. That flag means something. They've traveled. These are people who have some means. They now really believe the election was stolen because he said so. And there's something about that that is really frightening, because there is a part when the TV was on last week, they were rooting for the guy with the Confederate flag and the guy with the Auschwitz sweatshirt because they think the election was stolen and this is their only shot across the bow. And as much as they don't want to see bloodshed and dead cops and all that, they're thinking the election was stolen because Sean effing Hannity told me so. And I don't know how any of us is going to handle that.
Well, Nestor,
it doesn't make everybody go get a gun and act that way, but it's going to change everything, because we have not been able to make any of these people unbelieve any of it, including wearing a mask when their lives are on the line. It's insane.
Well, those are great points, Nestor. And before I jump to Damien as our communication expert, when you talked about your neighbors, Mark, I go back two or three paloozas ago, and you talked about your next-door neighbor and what a great guy he is over the fence, and you're on his roof helping him, and he's helping you, and you guys just see the world very differently. I'm wondering, does your neighbor think the election was stolen?
Sure he does. We haven't talked about it.
but you're pretty confident that he would.
I'm pretty sure. I mean, look, it's there are a lot of ways to look at where the future could go. And let me go back in history for a moment again. And I think that, you know, that if you, when these things erupt, we're in a place now where there are more people who are not black in America who think racism is a problem than ever before in the history of this country. That's huge. That's one of the reasons this happened. Because when we start moving that way, there's a reaction. And that's what's happened to us. The other side of it is, I keep thinking about the thing I was writing about this the other day, that like Kansas' dad, I was in the civil rights movement. And yes, because I'm that old. And
You're not 80. My dad is 80. You're not 80.
You're not old, Mark. You're wise. That's wisdom.
But, But
we won't tell them how old you are, Steiner.
One of the things I remember, and I'll never forget this, a couple of things I got to share with you, because I think this is where the hope lies for me, that it has to do, you have to be able to organize and change policies and engage an entire population beyond just yelling and screaming in the rhetoric between us.
Yes.
So a couple of quick examples. You all know who Fannie Lou Hamer was, who was still a rights worker from Mississippi, who was beaten and tortured by the police, who created the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party, who was a sharecropper thrown off her land. She's an amazing, powerful human being. I remember when she started her agricultural cooperatives in the Delta in Mississippi. And there were some white farmers that were going to join. And they were standing like a little farther away from where everybody else was. And somebody said to her, those people can't join us. And she said, why? And they said, because they're in the Klan. And her response was, honey, when they start working with us, they're not going to be in the Klan much longer. And I remember that rings in my head all the time. And I've seen it over and over again in the first Rainbow Coalition in Chicago, where the Black Panthers and the Young Lords and the Brown Berets were Mexicans, the Young Lords were Puerto Ricans, and the Young Patriots, who were Southern white guys from uptown Chicago, who had their own organization and they allied with the Panthers. Their leader was a guy named Doug Youngblood, who was a poet, a hillbilly poet, who had done 10 years in prison for manslaughter. He was also a member of the Ku Klux Klan in Alabama. He made a coalition with the Black Panther Party. They fought for tenants' rights and against police abuse together. It changed an entire world and way of thinking. So what I'm saying is the positive end of this is I know it can change. The question is, can we get there? Can we get to a place we can make a change? And part of that has to do with organizing. Part of that has to do with policy changes that really affect people's lives. I mean, because what Trump pinpoints in getting this movement rising, this movement has been rising for the last 50 years. But at this point, people who have lost their jobs and they blame China, they blame Russia, and they blame all these other places, and because they're desperate. And so you have to realize there is a way out. I'm not sure if we're going to get there. I hope we can get there. And there's a reason why, I'll say close with this, and this is where the danger zones are. There's a reason why that the group in America that is the fastest, that is buying more guns per capita than any other group in the country, or Black people in America right now. They have the highest percentage growth in purchasing legal weapons because people see a handwriting on the wall and aren't just going to stay back and take it. That's the danger zone. That's how dangerous the precipice we're on. And so, we don't know where our country's going to go right now.
And so, Damien, you're the guy, you and your firm are the folks that we call in at times like this. We're struggling with these big picture communication ideas. How do we get these discussions started, Damien? How do we begin to change, use the old Vietnam word, how do we begin to change hearts and minds?
Well, I think we need to begin, and it's difficult to do in this time, but we have to think that we have to not attach ideas to people all the time and think that, my idea is good and you're evil. Like that is, that's where we are these days. So that's a dangerous place to be. We've got to get beyond that and try to think about, are there three core values that all of these states, because that's what we are. This is the big question. We're the United States of America. When you travel around or you do one of these presidential forays, you understand the state is the ball game, and the people that are leaders in that state are leaders in the country. And so how can you find three things that connect sort of the humanity in all these states and focus on them? Obviously, I think a smart guy like Pete Buttigieg thought transportation and infrastructure would be a place that you could find a lot of commonality. And a lot of our corporate friends are going to have to take a different position in the government than I think they have been in the past. I think corporate actors as ourselves have been so disciplined to find out our own special interest and carve it out. I think even the actors that get paid specifically to do that work have to have a higher value system that they operate in and think about some of the other tangential or collateral impacts about the corporate agenda they are pressing. And so while I do press that on the corporations.
By the way, did we see that this week when they pulled the money from the Republicans?
Is that part of what we saw this week? America, you know, and domestic American policy has been traditionally run by the CEOs of America. And I think you're getting a sense of some of the, you always hear about the negative pieces, but I think you're getting some of the sense of virtue and stability that some of those actors can bring to the conversation should they choose. And they've been boxed out for so long or so focused on their own things. They've taken that sort of American leadership role off and focused on a more international audience, which has caused some of the problems that we've seen as well.
Is that as long as I get what I want with a tax cut, you guys can do whatever you want with the atmosphere. You can do whatever, like literally, is that you think
that's the kind of, that's the kind of thinking that has gotten us where we are. The deregulation and the banking, the workers' party, my party, the Democratic Party, for 20 years wanting to win so bad that we took on some of the causes and concerns of the other side to triangulate and win. And we found out later those were some pretty bad ideas that we sacrificed to get a win. So yeah, I think that's the kind of change of mindset our corporate leaders need to have.
Now,
they led the way. Hey, man, look, and all you want to say about corporate America stood with Colin Kaepernick. You know, Nike stood with Colin Kaepernick. You know, and so I feel like those corporations are now getting the sense of, you know, maybe I ought not to talk to Damien first. Maybe I ought to talk to Candace first and think about what kind. Think about what kind of team I have around me, what kind of advice I'm getting, you know, before I get into my whole communications mindset. Think about who's around you, who's advising you.
Can I just add to that really quickly? Because that's what I was about to say. And I think it's a talk to Damien and Candace, right? Like it's a, like Damien brings Candace to the table where Candace doesn't have access sometimes, right? Like the idea, so Black folks have been, and somebody's going to email me or send me a DM or something about what I'm about to say, but I'm going to say this. Black folks have been dealing with this for 400 years. Like, right? Like this is not new for us. And so if you want to look at solutions and you want to look at how we deal with this and you want to look at how, to Mark said, how we bring reasonable people to the table to address some of these issues, bring the Black folks to the table. So talk to Damien and Candace.
Well, and within this, is there not, and Lucinda, again, our most recent political operative, in the midst of this dark cloud, one of the things that I really lamented, and I'll go back to my experience on January the 6th. We've forgotten that many of us, because I know there are political junkies sitting around this table, were up till 2:30 or 3 or 3:30 the night before because magic was in the air in Georgia because of a young lady named Stacey Abrams and an African-American preacher from Martin Luther King's church and a young 30-something Jewish guy who was an intern for John Lewis decided not to run as Republican light, decided to run as unabashed progressives talking about jobs and minimum wage and health care and won big, big victories. And to ascribe all of that to the fact that Trump hurt the Republicans down there, which he did, I think does a disservice to Stacey Abrams and perhaps the shifting of this sand that Mark Steiner and others are talking about. And Lucinda, I'm wondering what you're hearing from your friends who were down there knocking on doors in Georgia.
Yeah, sure. So I think one thing that's super important that I want to add to what Damien and Candace both said is, you know, once you bring women and people of color to the table, which is the first step, I think the other process and the other part of this is you actually have to listen. and actually take their opinion and their point of view to heart. Many times we are let in the door, or we are, you know, asked to sit down, and then our opinions are discredited, or we don't know what we're talking about, or there's fear in what we're saying because there's probably truth. And that is something very hard for people to stomach. So I think it's twofold. You have to bring people to the table, but then you also have to value their opinions. I think Georgia is a perfect example of that. I mean, Stacey Abrams is someone who was already a rising star in Georgia politics, right? And we saw her have, I think, her last and final loss. And she started this amazing organization and traveled all of the United States while we had tons of Democratic candidates running for office. She took a completely different path in starting Fair Fight and then actually made it work, which I think is also super important. And I would say more successful than we've seen from the DNC, the DTRIP, the DSCC, and many other organizations that have been trying to do what she did for decades and have continued to fail. And I will say that and feel comfortable saying that as a Democratic operative. And she made it work, and she owned her power, and she owned her lane, and everyone got on board, and she knew what she was talking about. And the success of Georgia is the success of Stacey Abrams. And so I think it's super important. I mean, Georgia is still a tough state, but it's changing, similar to Virginia. I mean, I think we all can remember what Virginia was 30 and 40 years ago. And now look at it, I would say we could argue it's more blue than Maryland.
It was not listed, Lucinda, as a swing state. It was right. Never in the swing state column this time.
And, you know, it was such a shame when Nancy Pelosi had to pick up the phone to protect her life, and she couldn't call to her home state governor. She had to call to Virginia, the Commonwealth of Virginia, to find protection because, you know, we can't hold a governorship here in Maryland.
Well, Tom Cole, we've got 10 or 15 minutes left. Let's try to look forward. Can Joe Biden govern in this toxic atmosphere that we're describing? We're going to start with an impeachment trial because Mitch won't let it go forward now and get it out of the way, which is pure Mitch, nothing surprised. I don't know why anybody was shocked by that. But let's shift the discussion here to the Biden administration. Tom, what do you expect, and can he govern?
I got to tell you, this is a tough group to go first on three questions in a row, but I'll try it. I do think that normalcy is, and you know, normally, especially on these podcasts, I'm the cynical, pessimistic one, but I do think that normalcy is underrated. And I think that normalcy is going to do a lot to settle some of these big waves. And I think that's to the good and the bad. I think in the big waves, you have the opportunity to do big things. And I think that a Joe Biden presidency is going to bring moderation across the board. And I'm a little bit concerned that our opportunity to take on the biggest challenge of our time, global warming, climate change, is going to be dependent on a Democrat from West Virginia. But all that said, I do think that there is reason for optimism. I do think that as much as we need to do the things that Mark says and invite the Klansmen into our projects in order to build coalitions and show that we're human beings and all of that, I think that there's no room at the table for Trump, his family, or his most ardent followers. I do genuinely believe that there needs to be, this infection needs to be removed. And part of it is going to be bringing people in and people that were weak converts and the like. But the other side of it's got to be, this is not acceptable. This behavior is not acceptable. These words are not acceptable. And I think that Joe Biden, simply by being, and forgive me for saying this, boring, is going to do good things for the near term. Well, and I hope in the long term, we've got a Kamala Harris that's going to make things a little bit less boring and bring us out the other side.
Not long ago, Nestor and I had Governor O'Malley on the show, and he said something that morning that continues to resonate. He said, you know, Nestor and Don, he said, I said to Katie, I long for boring. He said, I'm looking forward to that day when they say the president's going to have a press conference at 10 a.m. And you turn it on and Joe comes out. He's got a few cabinet secretaries and he announces some transportation funding going to a couple of states. And he says, thank you, everybody, and walks away. And it's the most boring thing you could ever see. He's right where you were, Tom. He said, we need boring. So Mark Steiner, in the midst of boring, can Joe Biden govern?
Yeah, I think he can. I think this is going to be interesting to watch what's going to happen here. I think the Republicans are deeply split. Well, they're split. I don't know how deep, but they're split. Democrats have their split. I mean, the people who are centrists and the progressives have very different ideas about how to move ahead. That's going to be part of the dynamic that that Biden and Harris are going to have to navigate as well on their side of the aisle, and how to get these certain things through. So I think, I think psychologically and symbolically, Biden will be a calm, steady hand. And that's what people want after all this. That symbolism is important to people. And I think you'll see that on the other
hand. Mark, how important, let me jump in, I apologize. How important is it that he gets close to the 100 million people vaccinated in the first 100 days that he's setting as a goal?
Well, I think that's critically important. I think if I'm correct, I think he said, was it today or yesterday, he said that he's not so much interested in the trial of the first 100 days. He wants to get something done in the first 100 days. And I think that while the Democrats probably should go on and go after everybody who is involved in this and go after Trump for his involvement, I think the most important thing they need to do is to get the country straight quickly when it comes to COVID and start pushing the idea of putting money in people's pockets and investing in infrastructure. They've got to show that they're moving ahead and let the far right wing attack them for that, but to their detriment, I think. Because when people start seeing jobs and paychecks coming in, they'll begin to change their minds as well. And so I think the biggest thing that's going to happen the first half of 100 days is just the steady, quiet hand. And that, I think, just psychologically, you'll see a shift. But the battle is going to be rough because the right wing has grown. They're going to gain strength. And we're in a deep political war. You know, I always say we're not in a war between the states; we're in a war within the states. And so that's also part of the dynamic. It's not going to be an easy time. It will not be an easy time.
Hey, Nestor, I'm going to throw it to you, and maybe we'll go around the group. I was thinking about this, and I know all talk now is how to get people vaccinated and how quickly. You and Jen had a very, very different life pre-COVID. I'm just curious as we go around the table here, once, and it's not going to be in the next couple of months, but let's say 7 or 8, 9 months, when everyone is vaccinated, and as that old, they used to say on the plane, you're now free to get up and move around the plane. What have you missed the most, Nestor? What are you and Jen looking forward to when we can get up and move around the plane again?
Hugging people, I've said if I sit on the lawn at Merriweather and have a beer at a real concert with real people, that's an outdoor request. That's not indoor. That doesn't mean the Pearl Jam's coming back. I just mean, and I miss concerts far more than I miss ball games. And, you know, I'm a sports guy and what the Ravens have done, that's all cool. And there'll come a time for that. I feel like I've done a lot of that in my life, but that's what I miss traveling. I mean, I miss being able to get on a plane and go someplace that I want to go. And so traveling and concerts, those are my things. And I have a parting salvo a question I'm going to ask for everybody across the board, but have at it. What's everybody doing first?
Candace, what do you want to do first when we're free to get up and move around?
I'm seeing the entire family first and foremost. I've not seen my brother, sister-in-law, or nephew and nieces, and have not hugged my parents, even though I've seen them. And that is first and foremost. I agree with Nestor. I wasn't a big traveler. You know, I raised a kid for 18 years. She's 21 now, but like didn't do a ton of traveling as a single mom. I am going all of the places. Anybody invites me anywhere, anybody calls me to go somewhere,
You're there, huh?
Like,
you're
there. I'm there. Plane, train, automobile, all of it. I have a new appreciation for traveling. And then I'm like, Nestor, I had no idea I would miss like outdoor. I'm a big concert person as well. Outdoor concerts. Oh my God. Like I miss Meriwether like you would not believe. And that's not a selfish plug because I'm on the board.
Come on. How much did Damien ask each one of you to speak for Meriwether? I mean,
no.
I didn't even realize I was being patronizing. I mean, I've said this 100 times to 100 different people. I did say it to Calvin Ball, but it wasn't even patronizing for him.
I mean, but think about what concerts are. Like you build community, you have this community and it's like, you know, you're listening to music and you're outside and you're enjoying, you know, all of the goodness of Meriwether. And I miss that. And so my top three are similar to Nestor's.
How about you, Lucinda?
Of course, everyone with the festivals and the travel. I had this big trip to Red Rocks to go with friends.
See, that's what I'm talking about, Lou. Yeah, that's what I mean right there.
And I really just want to go see a movie. I don't want to watch Netflix on my computer screen anymore. Like,
amen.
Let's just stay with that.
How about you, Mr. Meriwether? I know you're going to say you want to go to Meriwether.
He wants to be next to me having the beer.
You could go to Color Burst Park and skate right in there, right? I skate right in the center of downtown Columbia. Look, I think I'm one of these people that just looked at, like, why am I focusing so much of my life on this American government and this failed state? And I've had some friends and family get me back into things, whether it's my high school that I grew up with or my Catholic faith. You know, I've sort of gravitated back to these other things that have had their moments of crisis. But to me, it seemed like pillars. So I've gravitated back to that. And I think I'd love to, in that same vein, I'd love to go check out Northern Ireland and where all our family came from again.
By the way, I'm watching him and his family go down ski slopes every day. You're having a better plague than we are.
I'm not allowed to post any midweek skiing. I can only post that on the weekends. My partners have made that very clear to me.
I'll
tell you this. You know, somebody as lucky as I am, you know, one of the best things you can do is try to get your, as all of us do, try to get our kids involved in athletics. And if we can get them involved in something and represent the country, man, that would be the greatest thing in the world, wouldn't it?
Well, Tom Cole, you welcomed a new addition during the pandemic. What are you looking forward to?
Yeah, so my wife and I, we bought a house in December of 2019, partly because it was a great entertaining house. So I really want to have all of my friends over for a big party, number one. And number two is, before everything went down, Damien offered to fly me out to Colorado to visit him. So I want to take him up on that offer because I'm not riding in a plane until this.
Because you need to be where Lauren Boebert is represented.
Candace too.
Yeah, I think Damien made me that offer too. So Tom, we're getting on a plane.
There you go. Well, before we hear from,
I will say this too. Tom lives around the corner from me. At some point, I'm going to like run down the street and jump in the pool. So
there you go. Well, we're going to have the biggest Sunday family dinner you've ever seen in Catonsville. We have missed family dinners more than you can imagine. Mr. Steiner, you're an adventurous man. What are you looking to do?
Oh man, first of all, the first thing that Candace said as well, I want to see my family. It's this they don't see anybody and see my friends and hang out and play and I want to travel. You know, I want to get back on the plane to places. I'm getting to be an old fart, man. I want to see some places, ports all over, you know. There's so many places I want to fly to and just hang out and play and party. And I'm just looking forward to it. Tom, you and I will be on probably at least the second tier getting these shots.
I'm ready. I kept looking at the chart. Yeah, I'm looking at the chart. Come on, I want to move up. I want to move up that list. Well, Nestor, I don't know about you, but I needed this session on the therapist's couch.
Well, listen, I got a final shot for all of you, and I think this is the most important thing. And we've had a little fun here, but let's get back to the last serious question, because we're talking about Biden and we're talking about what the future is going to be. What happens to Trump? Because I think what happens to him affects the terrorism that's going to happen in this country. To your point, how Biden governs in the first 100 days to make people feel like, yeah, they stole the election, but I can live with it. Not they stole the election and I'm going to wreck the country. I'll leave it for all of you. What really happens to Trump? What's the end of this story? How does the next 100 days, 6 months, 4 years, what becomes of him?
I'll be really quick. I think the black woman AG in New York puts him in jail.
Letitia James.
Yep. Yeah. I think he goes to jail. I do.
You do think he goes to jail?
I think so. I think she makes the case for him to go to jail.
I wonder how many Democrats really believe I'd love to believe he's going to jail, right? I mean, like, and this notion that we're going to let them burn the country down because it's going to hurt their feelings is, I mean, just an absurd thing that I've been hearing this week in that way. I'm not a vengeful person, but I really want some justice here.
Yeah, I agree, Nestor. I think my concern is, I think Trump will just go someplace in New York and sit down. I think what I am more concerned about is the rise of all the Trump children. I don't want to see Ivanka and Jared ever again, or Don Jr. and the rest of them. And unfortunately, they have a lot more life to live. And so what I wonder is how much his kids step up and follow his footsteps if they get into office. I love reading articles where the New York social elite have kicked them out.
Well, they will all be pardoned by next Wednesday because of Mitch, right? I mean, literally. Do we believe that, Lucinda?
I don't know.
I think they will be pardoned. Lucinda, I wasn't going to bring this up, but I have to now based on what you just said. I think those children are, my mother always tried me to teach me to choose my words carefully. I think they are despicable human beings. And the poster child for that was an article that I read right on my way in to do this podcast, that Jared and Ivanka's house has six bedrooms. So, I'm sorry, six bathrooms. Right. They refused to allow the Secret Service to use any one of the bathrooms in the house. And the Secret Service had to spend $3,000 a month to rent outdoor porta potties. Now, that tells me all that we knew and need to know about that entire Trump family entitled operation. As someone who had, and Damian, you know them well, security 24/7, those officers become part of your family. And they could not only have used my bathrooms, they could have used my bedrooms. They had access, if they wanted, to my kitchen. They are part of your family. These people have not an ounce of decency in their bones. And my wish, Nestor, before we hear from Tom, Damian, and Mark what their wish is for him, is I want the media to have enough discipline to not utter one word about him. Make him like Voldemort in Harry Potter, the name that shall not be spoken. And I pledge, and any of you call me on it if I break this pledge, that after January the 20th, I will not mention Donald J. Trump in any blog that I write. So obviously, I despise his children. Anybody, you can send me all the nasty grams you want. They are despicable human beings that you wouldn't want anywhere near your children. So Tom, Damian, or Mark, take us out of here. What do you want to see happen to Trump?
Yeah, I'll go first. I'll be quick. I actually have a sushi dinner bet with my brother over whether or not Donald Trump is going to be the Republican nominee in 2024. Right now, the odds makers in Vegas are giving him the best odds for getting that nomination. I'm most worried about the infielder and the outfielder both calling the ball and neither of them catching it, between the criminal justice system and the presumptive intelligence of the American electorate. So I obviously took the bet he's not going to get it, because I think Candace is right. If he is not above the law, he should be in jail. It is simple as that. If no man is above the law, Donald Trump should go to jail.
Well, I'll there's a lot of words I could use. I won't use now to describe how I feel. I just despise, I've always despised him. I mean, his reality show crap, everything he did before, he's a despicable human being who's not that bright. You know, he's one of these really rich boys, the kind when I was young and used to be a fighter, I just want to, even though they were big, I want to go knock his ass out. That's how I feel about people like that, you know? I mean, I think what's going to happen is that the movement around him, I said, will galvanize and will grow. And he will not wither away. He'll figure some way to get his voice out there. But I think Candace is right. I think that there's a real possibility that he could really flounder and get indicted and hopefully go to jail. I'd like to see his butt in jail. I mean, he, you know, if they impeach him and the Senate votes yes, if that happens in the trial, it means that he loses everything. He loses protection. He loses the money for travel. He loses it all. And he'll just flounder. Let me just leave with this. Remember, what we're facing in America today is bigger than Donald Trump. It's not just Donald Trump. Donald Trump was like the monster figure in the front. And the right wing got their way to really transform America under Trump in ways going to take a lot to fight and build back again. But this is not just about Trump. We all want to see him go down just because he's just such a despicable human being. He's just disgusting.
Well, we're looking for justice, right? I mean, you know, like whatever justice would feel like. And we're missing someone. Did someone else?
Damien is going to get the last word.
I can't see him on my screen. Damien, I'm sorry.
Always a little scary when Damien gets the last word. But
and Lucinda, right? Did Lucinda? And
it's
Lucinda
just Damien. Damien's going to take it home.
Square.
Come on, Lucinda. Why are you
Damien, it's all you. Damien's got it.
Well, Don asked a different question. Don asked what you want to see happen to him. I ask what's really going to happen.
What's really?
Right.
Yeah, that impeachment piece is tantalizing, though it runs along your first 100 days, which can be really debilitating and force you to make your agenda much more to the right than you wanted as a Democratic president, because you need to capture some of the votes for the concurrent impeachment. But boy, being able to knock him out of the gate so they can't run again, I mean, that's the goal of that impeachment process, and you only need 51 votes. That's tantalizing. But then where does that culture go to, right? That culture goes to Ivanka and to Don Jr., and I'd love to give those guys a bread knife and a spoon and watch those two fight it out for the Trump legacy. But it's a scary proposition no matter where you go, I think, with this. And I think our international leaders are expecting another Trump Biden experience in 4 years. So they're going to be very trepidatious about doing things, especially while the Trumps are loose all throughout the world, trying to make money off the intelligence that they have had clearance for over the last 4 years. It's the nightmare will continue.
Well, Damien, we're not going to let you get out of here, even though we're coming up against the clock. We're going to end on a high note. You were in Annapolis. You were a staffer. Worked with Senator McFadden and others. You've been around Senator Mike Miller for your entire adult life. Give us a quick reflection of the longest serving Senate president in the United States who for the first time in 40 years won't be in Annapolis. Give us the Damien O'Doherty take.
I'm so proud of my association with him, because I saw so many progressive ideas over the last 20 years have 15 or 17 votes or half of what you need to get it done in Annapolis. And I watched this lion of the Senate, who's supposed to be more conservative than the rest of them, convince half the rest of the body to go along with everything from gun bans to marriage equality to huge education spending that our current governor doesn't see fit for the people of Maryland. So he's just been an incredible lion. And I think you and I both saw a clip of him talking to President Clinton from his bed, candidly, and we could hear the Miller side of the question. And Clinton said, you know, I wish we could have 100 more like a Mike Miller's, but have them in Congress. Right. And Mike Miller sort of stopped President Clinton cold on the phone
and reminded him of all the amazing people that came out of his body and the House of Delegates. You know, Jamie Raskin, who's leading the floor today to last week on the impeachment. You know, he named everybody from Anthony Brown to Steny Hoyer to Ben Cardin to Van Hollen, all these names that are so critical to the sacred nature of the union, really got their training coming up with Mike Miller. And, you know, I think he's getting sort of the befitting send off that he deserves as really our greatest Marylander in public life. I think he's outdone Louis Goldstein. He would never let me say that. So I'll say, Mr. Senate President, you have outdone Louis Goldstein.
And with that, Nestor, take us out of here.
Oh, well, I appreciate ahead, all of you.
Wait a minute, Nestor. Mark wants to say something.
One last thing is with Damien said, I just have to leave this one thought about Mike Miller, who I really like. After my years of Indianapolis Summit, I'm really getting to know him. Every time I saw him, my wife Valerie was with me. The first thing he would look to her and go, "You're married to him." Yes, my condolences. That was he would say that every time he saw us. My condolences to you, being married to him. So I really, as much as he and I, we're at it sometimes, I just love that man. He's just a solid, solid human being. Solid.
Well, I appreciate all of you coming together under these circumstances. We were going to do Hail Biden. Don was going to get me socially distanced tickets. We're taking an inauguration, the whole deal, and it became impeachapalooza. So obviously we hope to get together again quarterly soon, sometime soon, and hope that stability and hope maybe four or five of us have shots by then. I'll be the last in line, I think. Thank you very much. On behalf of former Baltimore County Executive Don Moeller and Mark Steiner and Damien O'Doherty and Tom Cole and Candace Dotson-Reed, Lucinda Ware, did I forget anybody? Damien, I've only got the view of five or six of you. Did I get everybody?
I think you did it this time.
Oh, jeez. I don't want to mess that all up. Thank you very much. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Baltimore positive.